Our program today is the Local Food Hub. Local food, fresher, lower transportation costs, support of local producers. What could be better? Our guest today for the Hub is Kristen Suoco. Hope I pronounced it right. She is the executive director of the Food Hub. She maintains a wealth of experience in environmental philanthropy and nonprofit excellence, as well as environmental planning and sustainability. She began her career in Washington, D.C., working for the National Resources Defense Council and U.S. Department of Energy. She's lived in Charlottesville for over 15 years and previously held positions with the W. Alton Jones Foundation, we're probably all familiar with that, and the Blue Moon Fund. She received a degree in Russian from Middlebury College in Massachusetts and is from New England, Cape Cod. Thanks for coming.
Thank you all. Thanks for the warm welcome. Before I get going, I want to just ask a couple of questions. Give me a show of hands if you, anytime in the last 4 to 6 months, have either intentionally or not intentionally eaten something that was grown locally. Okay. That's great. How many of you maintain your own gardens or have gardened at times in the past? So you're all producers. You're all partners in the local food movement. Yes, they do. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the what, why, how, and where of the local food movement and Local Food Hub in particular. So Local Food Hub is a nonprofit organization that partners with Virginia farmers to increase community access to local food. It's really built as sort of a three-legged stool, and I'm going to get into more detail about what those three legs are, but they basically include the aggregation and distribution of local food from local farmers, training and services for those farmers, and food access programming to make the food system more equitable. I'm often asked why we are set up as a nonprofit, because as you'll see, we do have sort of a business element to us. And so I like to get that question out right at the beginning. We're incorporated as a nonprofit for two reasons. The first one is that we believe that paying the farmer a fair price takes precedence over making a profit, and that there is scaffolding that needs to be built around the local food system to make it work for everyone. That scaffolding includes education, it includes infrastructure, it includes lots of relationship building and hands-on connections. And that really takes the kind of structure that we've developed to be able to really accomplish all of that. So next is the why. I'm going to take us a little bit through the history of how Local Food Hub got started, but let me first start by saying that we do what we do because we believe that food choices have profound impacts on our community, on the land, on the climate, on public health, and on the local economy. It's really all about resilience and building the resilience of our community, keeping land in agricultural use, keeping money circulating in the economy, and keeping a reliable food supply for the community. Now, agriculture is Virginia's largest economic sector, but it might surprise you to know that many, many farmers have a hard time making a living, and that much of the food, the majority of the food that is consumed here, is not actually grown here. There is a large import-export arrangement that goes on with our agricultural production. In addition, there are large pockets of food insecurity and poor health related to diet. This might surprise you, but the Charlottesville area, despite our resources and our wealth and our agricultural resources, is actually 55th in the state in terms of overall health. So that's kind of was a shocking statistic to me when I found it. But we believe that eating better and eating locally can do a lot to change that entire paradigm that I just described. So that is really the why of what we do. The Local Food Hub was formed after a community examination of the local food system that happened back in 2008. Madison mentioned, I was part of a local philanthropy that helped sponsor that study. And it was actually led by JABA, of all things. They arranged this group to come together to talk about the local food system. And one of the results of that discussion was that there was really frustrations on both sides of the food equation, that there were more and more institutions that were interested in supporting local farmers and in sourcing food locally. They recognized the superior quality and nutrition. They wanted to help support the local economy. But they had no real way of doing it. It was very difficult to work with multiple small farmers. There were challenges with transportation, challenges with liability insurance, all kinds of different problems. Farmers, meanwhile, also wanted to be accessing some of these markets. You know, small to medium-sized farms can make a fair amount of money running, you know, going to farmers markets, running community-supported agriculture programs and things like that, but their margin is quickly cut down when you take into account all of the marketing and time and transportation and so forth that has to go into that. They were also limited in how much they could access these larger institutional markets for some of the reasons that I mentioned. Liability, quantity, all of those kinds of things. So Local Food Hub was launched in 2009, a year after that study took place, and it was basically launched on a wing and a prayer, a donated warehouse, one rented truck, and 10 farmers signed up, and it has been growing exponentially ever since, somewhere between 15 and 30% every year since 2009. So getting to the how, this is just a little diagram that we've done of basically how it works. You can kind of see the back and forth between Local Food Hub and its partner producers. We purchase the food from them and provide support services back to them, and then go out into the community with the food, with partnerships with other organizations, and with an educational agenda. So I'm going to walk through in a little bit more detail how it works. This is a photograph of our warehouse. We have a 3,000 square foot refrigerated warehouse out in Ivy. It has four different temperature zones so that we can safely store a whole variety of product. It's primarily fruits and vegetables, but we also buy eggs, other types of protein, some meats, and then value-added products. What that means is things like honey and vinegar and stone ground grains and things like that. So what we are able to do, so farmers, as you can see in the picture, bring their product to us. It gets checked for quality and those kinds of things, and then it gets labeled. So there's 100% traceability back to the farm of origin, and you can always find the story of that farm. So all of the stories of all the farms we work with are featured on our website and in other places. And then it gets aggregated in a way that makes sense for the institutions that want it. So if one, you know, if that's, say, you know, one quantity right there of, of, say, heirloom tomatoes, multiply that by 10 farms, and you've got enough to make sense for UVA Hospital to purchase, for example. So that's kind of how it works. We aggregate it, and then we sell it out. We take full possession of the product when it reaches this dock right here. Farmers get paid within 2 weeks, and they get paid 80 cents on every dollar that we sell in product. Now compare that to about 17 cents, between 17 and 20 cents, that they would get selling through a standard kind of retail channel. So, you know, that's really one of the pillars of Local Food Hub is making sure that they get paid the fairest price possible. In our best year so far, we did about $1.5 million in sales, which means that amount of money basically staying in circulation in our community. We have three refrigerated trucks. You can kind of see one of them there. And our footprint, so the footprint of our farmers, we've got about 70 that we work with now. The footprint of the farmers is throughout Central Virginia, probably within about a 200-mile radius or so. Our sales footprint is basically the state of Virginia. So we go as far as Richmond, we go over into the valley, and we go up into Washington, D.C. And I can talk a little bit more about what some of our customers are, but we'll get into that a little bit more. So the second pillar of our work is our grower services. So while we recognize that paying farmers a fair price is the most important thing that we can do, we also recognize that there were a number of things that that farmers could really use to help them navigate this whole new marketplace that they may not have had experience with before. So we provide no-cost training and technical assistance to all of our partner farms. We carry a large liability insurance policy for all of the product, and we do all of the marketing, sales, and we maintain traceability. Food safety, as you may be aware, has been a growing issue in the last several years, something that the federal government really has been paying a lot of attention to, and there are many new regulations in place. So we also assist our partner farms with understanding what that means for them and helping them get their certifications, as they need them. So I just want to talk about the diversity of the farms that we work with. This is Chris and Catherine Poles. They own Phantom Hill Farm, which is in Louisa County. They've only been farming since 2012. It's family land, but it had never been in farming use before, and they specialize in greens, as you can see. And they are just, wonderful partners. They've been part of Local Food Hub since just after they started their farm. In contrast, this is DJ Livingood. He's with Walnut Winds Farm in Pennsylvania County. He is a third-generation farmer. This is his family here. And they have been farming on this land since the 1980s. They have a diversified farm. They grow lots of different things. And he's both one of our most consistent producers, but also because of his partnership with us, is able to be very flexible and try new things and can be really experimental, and we really enjoy partnering with him on that. So the third pillar is our community partnerships and our food access programming. So one of our values is that the food system will be equitable for everyone in the community, not just those who can afford the sort of slightly higher price for local food. So we partner with all of these different organizations on a variety of programs to increase access to local food. And I'm going to go through just a couple of them. So one is our work with the schools. We work with about 70 public schools in 8 districts in this area. In the city schools, we partner with City Schoolyard Garden on something called the Harvest of the Month program, which is a monthly snack program, always consisting of some fresh local item, grown by farmers around here. And it's a really wonderful program. And then Virginia has its own farm to school week and month, actually, which is usually in October. And there's a very intensive effort around that, going into the schools and doing educational programs. A big growing demand is coming from private schools and universities. The University of Virginia has made a commitment to sustainability practices, one of which includes vastly increasing the amount of food that they source locally. So we're working with them on that. And then one of the programs that I'm most excited about is our Fresh Pharmacy program. So this is a program that works with 3 low-income health clinics in the city, the Java West Haven Nursing Clinic, the Charlottesville Free Clinic, and the Sentara Star Hill Clinic. Patients are identified by their health practitioner as being at risk for diet-related diseases, but also ready to make a change. And they are literally given a prescription, which you can see down in the bottom corner there, of a biweekly supply of fresh fruits and vegetables. We use volunteers from the community to pack the bags. It's a big community event. They come and talk about what's in the bags and how they cook them and all of those kinds of things. We've done it for 2 years now, and we can reliably say that 80% of the participants in this program have shown measurable improvements in their health. Now, sometimes that's combined with, you know, other steps that they're taking with their health practitioner, but this program is a big part of those improvements, and we're looking to expand it. This year. Now, you know, a lot of people think that school kids or, you know, people who haven't had a lot of exposure to fresh food, you know, might not be excited about it, or, you know, that are reluctant to, you know, to try new things. I can tell you definitively that that is not the case. Everyone that I'm describing in all of these programs, the school kids, the fresh pharmacy patients, are thrilled with what they are experiencing. And, you know, we do focus groups, and they talk about the, you know, they talk about the difference in the eggs, that they're, you know, the color of the yolk and the freshness of the greens, and it's really something. So that's really our an example of some of our food access programs. We also have a program that we've started with the Crutchfield Corporation, which we call Farm to Workplace, which is similar to Fresh Pharmacy, but it's part of their wellness program. So employees can sign up for a biweekly share of fresh fruits and vegetables also, and it's subsidized by the company. So lastly, I just want to talk a little bit about the where. So where do we go from here? You know, is this sustainable? You're a nonprofit. How is this, you know, going to continue? What's the trend and the trajectory for local food? What I can say is that the alternative food system, and I hate that name because I don't think it should be alternative at all, but that's how it's labeled by many. So this food system is actually the fastest growing sector of the food economy. So there has been a recognition at all levels that that communities really do need to build their resilience around food systems, and that industrial agriculture definitely has its place, but maybe is not the whole answer to how we feed ourselves. Food hubs take on a lot of different forms. So, you know, we are a physical nonprofit hub. There are for-profit ones. There are virtual ones. They're growing by leaps and bounds. There are probably about 400 now across the country registered by USDA. But Local Food Hub was really at the cutting edge or the leading edge of that movement. When Local Food Hub was started, there were, you know, you could count on two hands the number of actual food hubs around the country. So we're actually in the process of doing a strategic planning process, a 3 to 5 year strategic planning process, to really look at where we need to invest to be able to make this a sustainable model. We are very much subject to the vagaries of weather and other challenges. You know, the 70 degrees in February may be really pleasant, but it doesn't work very well for fruit farmers, I can tell you that. So there's a lot of different challenges that we're working through, but you know, we're committed to being here for the long haul and continuing to partner with our farms. You know, we have this vision of a food system that has small farms at its center, and in which everyone has equal access to fresh, local, and I would say nutritious food. So, you know, we often also get asked, you know, how can people get more involved in the food system? Well, obviously, seeking out and buying local food from local farms, whether it's at a grocery store or at a farmer's market, is obviously one way. There are other partnership opportunities with Local Food Hub. If you know a company or a corporation that would be interested in maybe starting a farm-to-workplace program or doing a corporate sponsorship for Local Food Hub, that's one way. We do use volunteers for many of these food access programs, and so that's always a great way. We have events throughout the year, so, you know, if you'd like, before I go, would love to, you know, if you'd like to sign up on our mailing list and find out about more of our events. And then there's always, you know, investing in the food hub. I'm going to put up, this is my contact information. It's very straightforward, and, you know, and we've got a pretty easy to navigate website, and, you know, we hope that you'll all get inspired and get engaged. And I would love to take questions.
When I was talking to you earlier, you were talking about CSAs. I think it might be good if you could explain that to me. One of the things I think I'll look around here is most of the people here are feeding families of one or two. Mm-hmm. So if we just want to buy, if it, I think a CSA is something that I could go and get a lot. I want to know how it would apply to people who just eat a very small amount and not have to buy large amounts.
Yeah, that's a great question. So CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture, and this is something that individual farms will set up and consumers can buy a share in that farm. And so throughout the growing season, you as a consumer will get a weekly or biweekly supply of whatever that farm has growing at the time. Sometimes they ask you to actually participate in helping out on the farm. Sometimes you just go pick up at the farm. Sometimes they deliver. It just varies according to the farm. And there are some wonderful CSA programs around this area. CSAs are great because they can adjust quantities. Most of them now have options for, you know, a single person, a couple, you know, various sizes of shares. And so that's, you know, I would just explore some of those CSA options, and I think you'll find something that will be suited to you. In the case of some of the food access programs that we do, we try to do that as well. We try to offer, you know, different sizes of shares, because of course you don't want to have more food than you can, you know, possibly deal with. I've thrown out a lot of greens in my in my lifetime for that very reason.
You mentioned that the local food hub has grown since it started in 2009 each year. But how much of that is because you're just reaching out to more farms, and how much of it is that there is actually more farming going on over that period?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's a we're always struggling with the balance and the formula of supply and demand, right? So I think part of it is that demand has grown. I think part of it is that our capacity to meet that demand by going to more places has grown. And I think it's that there is definitely more farming, more people getting into farming, and it's been a wonderful word of mouth phenomenon that there is this tool, this local food hub that farmers can take advantage of. I should say, you know, when we talk about CSAs and farmers markets and so forth, we never did intend and certainly are not the be all and end all for a farm. A farm needs to have a diversity of outlets in order to make their business viable, and all of them do. So all the partners that we work with, you know, have a CSA and a farmer's market and direct relationships with restaurants and so forth. But it's really each individual farm that figures out what their business formula is. But I would say that there has been a market growth, especially in the category of very small farms. And when I say very small farms, I'm talking, you know, an acre to 10 or 12 acres.
Are there some retailers in the area that you particularly like to distribute to? I'm thinking of a couple of retailers that don't seem to me to do much in the way of local food.
So our greatest partners locally tend to be independent grocers. So Integral Yoga, Rebecca's, Elwood Thompson's, which is closer to Richmond. So there's independent grocers who we really, you know, work well with. We have we've put a lot of effort into trying to develop relationships with some of the larger grocery chains. And really what it comes down to is the way their supply chain works. They tend to concentrate around a central distribution location, which might mean that, you know, we would have heirloom tomatoes that we'd get from a farm that would then go to North Carolina and then come back to, you know, our grocery store here in Charlottesville. That doesn't ever seem to really make much sense, but we are continuing to have those discussions. There is demand. They know that there's demand, and so, you know, we're not giving up. We're continuing to talk to them. Did you have any in mind? We can talk after.
I just wanted to ask about whether you help publicize local groceries who do, like, Reed Supermarket and Foodsville Nation. They do have local produce. I don't know if they buy from you, but they're pretty good about promoting local?
Yes, we do. We try to do whatever we can to celebrate people who are committed to local food. So we do, you know, we have a variety of communications tools that we use to do that. We, you know, we do a lot on social media and that kind of thing. And particularly when we've got, you know, a particular partnership with them. And you're right. I mean, those grocers definitely do. Foods of All Nations has been a really, really great promoter of local food. So, yeah, we do try to do that for sure.
Not very local.
That is the challenge.
Wait, where's the nearest other local food hub type thing? And do you interchange with excess supply with the other groups?
Yeah, that's a great question because I think part of the future of local food is that kind of networking and integration. As it is now, the closest example or that you know similar organization is Appalachian Sustainable Development, which is in Abington. So they are just a little bit far to be able to do that real integration, but we have regular discussions with them about how we can do that. Then the next closest one is actually up in Philadelphia. It's called the Common Market. So there's there are just not a lot really in Virginia. There are sort of smaller efforts. You know, Richmond has made a real effort to try and do an integrated local sourcing and so forth. But
are you tied in at all with the canning operation down in Farmville?
Yes. So actually, we have just this year started to carry a lot of the products that they have been producing. Homegrown Virginia is the corporate, if you can call it that, name of it, and we work closely with Allie Hill, who runs that operation. Yeah.
Would you talk a little bit about your training in technical support, whether you do that all in-house or who you partner with to help
sure.
folks?
Yeah, so we have a full-time person on our staff who directs our grower services. She is a farmer herself. For many years, she ran our educational farm, which was down in Scottsville. And so she organizes and conducts a lot of the training in-house. We also have a great partnership with the Extension Service and Virginia Tech and the Virginia Department of Agriculture. So we have a lot of different partners that we work with. A lot of the training is farmer-driven. So we do a workshop series that is really around topics that farmers have chosen. So it could be integrated pest management or, you know, cover crops for soil health or, you know, various things like that. As I mentioned earlier, though, we've had a real emphasis in the last couple of years on the food safety issues. So farmers are realizing more and more that even if they are not subject to the federal regulations around food safety because they're exempt, because they're small or whatever, the market is really driving demand for food safety certified food. So, it's a huge challenge. I mean, it's the record keeping alone for some of these food safety regulations is pretty enormous. And so we do a lot of work helping walk farms through what it takes to get food safety certified. We do a cost share program so that they don't have to absorb all of the costs of getting certified and so forth. But we do a lot of it in-house.
You mentioned that your producer catchment area is multi-county. And with respect to the question back here about other like organizations, a few years ago I was under the impression there was some sort of locavore movement in Madison County. Is that anything that exists or that you're associated with?
So Madison County does have a tremendous, kind of set of resources around local food. There is not a hub that I know of. I do know that there was a major company, Blue Ridge Produce, was settled in Madison County and was buying from a lot of local farmers. I don't know how much of that they're doing anymore. You know, farmers, as you get sort of north of here in the Piedmont, are really much more D.C. facing and have great markets in D.C. that they can access directly. And so, you know, it could be that the need for a food hub isn't quite as is quite as great there. But we certainly have producers that that go all the way up into Madison, and we try to stay on top of the various efforts. But as far as I know, there's not any kind of organized hub at this point.
One small question: in the winter months after the growing season, what do you do for food?
That's a great question. It's a huge challenge. So the answer to that is twofold. One is, I mentioned value-added products. There are more and more producers in this area who are focused on those kinds of products. So, as I mentioned, vinegars and honeys and stone ground wheats and all sorts of products like that. So we're trying to build out our line of products that those kinds of things get us through the winter. There are things in Virginia that do store well for many, many months. So we have apples, for example, pretty much through the month of February. We're really just starting to wind down on apples now and other kind of long-term storage crops. And Virginia is wonderfully blessed with long growing seasons. And many of our farmers have built these contraptions called high tunnels, which are sort of unheated greenhouses. And you can grow greens in those high tunnels for pretty much almost year round. So we're trying to develop more and more relationships with farmers who are doing that and encouraging them to extend the season. But it definitely slows down. February and March are tough months at the food hub.
Tell me about the meats that you provide.
Yes, absolutely.
Meats.
Yeah. As of this moment, the only meat that we can that we are legally able to handle is frozen. So we don't do any fresh meat at this point in time. We have relationships with several meat producers. So one of our greatest producers, unfortunately, is not producing now anymore, the Rock Barn, which did a lot of pork products, sausages and things like that. We work with Edwards of Surrey. We work with a new abattoir that is focused on Virginia-grown beef, which is called Seven Hills Food, which is in Lynchburg. And so we've been doing a lot of work with them on distributing ground beef and other products like that. What I will say is that the Virginia-grown and processed meat sector is probably one of the biggest growing sectors in local food right now. There are a lot more producers getting into cattle and other meat raising, and with these new production facilities popping up, it's really a growing sector, and it's a great product for places like the university and the hospital and places like that to really start with increasing their local purchasing.
One more quick one. What do you mean by certification?
Sure. So the United States Department of Agriculture runs a couple of programs, or many programs, to certify farms for a variety of things. The one I was particularly referring to is called Good Agricultural Practices, or GAP. And that is a certification that says that a farm is following all food handling and safety practices as designated by USDA, and that they have kept records that they are doing that. So it involves things like hand washing stations and how they do their irrigation and where they get their irrigation water, all of those kinds of things. The list is, miles long. But what we do is help walk them through what changes they need to make on their farm to meet these regulations, how they need to do their record keeping, and then we help facilitate the relationship with the certifier. So USDA will come out, check everything, make sure that they're compliant, and then give them that certification. And then that allows them to say that they're GAP certified, and it allows us to then carry product that is all GAP certified. And our facility, by the way, is also food safety certified. So.
Another question. Do you make a distinction between organic and inorganic? And if so, which one wins out normally?
Organic is a you know, is an actual certification. So again, a farm has to go through a lot of work to get organically certified. The land has to be fallow and not have any inputs for something like 3 or 4 years, and you know, all of the inputs have to be certified as organic and all of that kind of thing. We have a few organic farms that we work with. There are fewer organic farms, certified organic farms in this area than you might think. That said, I would argue that all of our farms use close to, if not completely, organic practices, certainly sustainable practices. I mean, these are families that, you know, live on the land where they're farming, you know, in many cases for generations. They care about the land, they care about the health of their families, and they're very hands-on with their growing practices, and they use mostly sustainable practices. We don't have a checklist per se, but we do go to every single farm that we sign up as a partner producer, and we require a water tests and certain other tests to ensure that they're meeting certain standards. I would say that most small farming in this area is sustainable, even if it's not certified organic.
I learned when visiting in Oregon, which grows so many wonderful things, that one of the problems with organic growing is your neighbors. You have to have so much land between you and the that separates it.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. And of course one of the big challenges, yeah. Yeah, because oftentimes, you know, as I mentioned, most of these farms that we're working with are just a few acres, if that. And so to then have to have those buffer zones and things, too, is really challenging.
Milk or chickens and eggs and things
yes,
like that?
Yes, eggs, eggs definitely. Chicken eggs and quail eggs, actually. There's a big demand in restaurants for quail eggs. And then we do work with several cheese makers. So we carry quite a lot of cheese. Caramont Cheese, which is down in Nelson County, is one of our biggest suppliers. So a whole range of different types of cheeses. Raw milk or liquid milk, not so much. Mm-mm.
What kind of volunteer opportunities do you have?
Sure. So during the farm to school month that I was mentioning, we often have volunteers go into schools with our partner producers and do samplings and talk to the kids and you know, those kinds of things. It's really a wonderful experience. And then our fresh pharmacy and farm to workplace programs also involve volunteers packing bags for those programs, and we're probably going to expand that this year and do more of the packing ourselves. So we'll be looking for volunteers to help with that as well. And then we also use volunteers at some of our events.
Any other questions? Okay, one more.
With respect to meat, there was a case here some years ago, I'm not sure how close, where a farmer got in trouble. He was raising pork and slaughtering it on the farm and selling locally, and he got in trouble with the Department of Agriculture because he had to take it to an authorized slaughterhouse. You mentioned new abattoirs. Is that solving that problem now?
It's starting to solve that problem. Yeah, that you know, it's up until recently... Well, you can attest to this. It was, it was really hard to find a certified facility that was within a reasonable distance to do that. That is starting to change. So, I'd say I know of at least 3 or 4 in this region that have opened up in the last, in the last couple of years, and it is starting to solve that problem. But I do know about that case. I think it was Polyface Farm, actually. But yeah.
All right. Any additional questions? Well, if not, we thank Kristen for her program.